Look up there in the sky. It's a bird, a plane. It's Handsome Boys Comics Hour.
Those boys are so handsome.
One writer,
one artist,
one weekly discussion of comics and nerd culture. I'm your host, Robert Dorman, literature geek and writer.
And I'm your other host, Eric Z. Goodnight, professional artist and illustration nerd.
We are the Handsome Boys Comics Hour, your home for news, reviews, slightly antagonistic banter, and much, much more. We had
I'm a little disappointed you didn't read the introduction verbatim today.
Well, you didn't either.
Well, I figured you're setting the precedent there, so I figured I'd get away with it.
Well, see,
does this mean that the troll war has finally ended?
If you had shown some creativity and not just copied mine, maybe I would have.
I have a question. What's a dumby? Is it like Gumby?
No, it's a dummy.
That's not how it's spelled. That's dummy.
That's a different kind of dummy.
Okay, whatever.
I was intentionally going for a childish insult, so I spelled it childishly.
Okay, well.
That's how a child would spell dummy, correct?
Fair. Okay. I don't have a problem with your logic.
Okay,
but,
good.
I am walking away from this.
What? Okay, then.
Throwing up my hands in futility.
I'm just going to splice together old episodes of you talking. And
okay, that's fine. You got enough of my lip on there for probably another 10 seasons.
What do you think about this comic? You know,
it's pretentious. It's trying too hard.
This one's trying too hard. Double buy. So, Handsome, that's how you do it out there in Radio Land. Is this what this is? Right, we're in Radio Land.
Call it.
Mm-hmm. Or is it Podcast Land? Is that like a region?
It's a suburb of Radio Land.
A suburb. That makes sense. It makes sense.
They're gentrifying it.
Oh, no. It's going to be like Brooklyn soon enough.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's where all the pictures are going.
We got a good episode for you. We got some good comics to talk about. Comics I'm excited to talk about.
Despite how stupid we are.
No, we're pretty dumb. But we do have some good comics to talk about. We got Authority coming up in our book club. Very excited to talk to Eric about that. Some good books and weekly floppies. And speaking of weekly floppies, let's jump right in. Ooh, that's a good noise.
I distinctly heard a noise that time.
Yeah.
Robbie's showing off his toys.
Yep, exactly.
He's got an application that plays noises. It's amazing.
I wish it was so simple. I've got an application that reroutes my sound, and then I have to reroute it again. And, oh my god, it was crazy.
It took him 4 hours.
If I'm going to spend that much time, I am going to use it at every opportunity, including being dumb with you.
I'm pretty sure that's in our mission statement.
I think so. We have a mission statement? Probably should get around to that. Weekly Floppies is part of the show, and Eric and I read and review the week's books, telling you to buy or do not buy them. And you should listen to us, because we are smart guys.
Even though, like, maybe 1 minute ago, we said we were really dumb.
That was a non sequitur. Ignore that. First book up for the week is Rumble, number 2. Co-created, John Arcudi, James Herron, Dave Stewart on colors, Chris Alopoulos, Chris the Greek on letters. I think this issue confirms all our thoughts from issue number 1, and I'm okay with that. I think I still enjoy it for the weirdness in the characters. I think that's what this book really is. And with that Scarecrow guy, the Scarecrow guy. Yeah.
I'm certainly more okay with it now than I was in the first one. Like, I think that because it is becoming clear what kind of story this is going to be, all the little asides don't feel like dicking around. It's just, I don't know. It's nice dicking around, I guess. I don't know. It fits, and it's just becoming clearer and clearer what this book is, and I'm liking that shape more and more.
No, I agree. And it doesn't take itself seriously, and that's, I think, part of it that makes it easy to like. It's makes fun of itself. The bit with the there's this, you know, the note written in, you know, some ancient language, and it's just an IOU, mm-hmm. and it's not even an IOU for all the money. I did shed a tear when that cute snake got its heads chopped off.
It's a Hydra. It'll grow them back.
Oh, I guess that's fair. I think it still has one head left by the time.
Mm-hmm. Two. I say two.
Okay. Well, good. I don't feel so bad. But, no, I still really enjoyed it. I still had a lot of fun with this book. The art's really nice.
I mean, I liked the first one, but I was a little unsure about where it was going. I'm a confident buy on number two. Number two is dynamite. This is fantastic art. God, everyone's so ugly, but that's really, it's charming.
It is. It works in its favor.
Oh, absolutely. God, that's goofy. That snake thing is so, it's just so strange looking.
It is.
And the cat?
Yeah. Oh, God. It eats so much that it.
Yeah, it just vomits all over the place.
I don't know what happened. It exploded with light. Maybe it evolved to its next form.
Clearly, that's what it is. It became Raichu.
It became an electric rat instead of a cat anymore.
I mean, it's something. You know how it is with Pokemon.
I do know how it is with it. Mr. Bildad. We have to give the cat his proper name.
Well, I'm glad it's a Bildad.
Bildad. But yeah, I'm a buy as well. It's a really fun comic. I think I'm officially on board for the ride.
It is official.
I'm officially a fan. So, double buy, Rumble number two. Next up, on to DC, premiere that, ugly costume, as Eric had said the other day.
The ugly side.
Oh, it's all right. I think it's okay. I don't think it's great, but it is Teen Titans number six. Script by Will Pfeiffer, art Scott Hepburn, colors Dan Brown, letters John J. Hill. It says Human Resources Part 2. I was able to follow along pretty easily. It's not really so heavily steeped in continuity that I didn't know what was going on. We haven't read since, I think the last one I have is 3, so we've skipped a couple.
Yeah.
What do you think about the new Power Girl?
She is fair to middling, I think. I'm not overly impressed. It's okay. I think her backstory where she's all weepy because she was friends with Power Girl, I don't know, it just seemed really whiny.
Her mom died.
I don't know. I know, but meh.
Meh? Her mom died. Have a heart.
No such thing.
No such thing?
She's not crying in the panel where she's like, my mom died. She's crying when she's like, I love Karen. It doesn't.
Ish.
Whatever.
Whatever. What do you think about the book in its entirety?
It's okay. I am not wild about it. I really enjoy the art. It's weird and loose. It makes me think of Arcudi. We, you know, last book just read. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are some places where the faces are handled a little bit weird. Some excellent color too. Nice and bright. Suits the subject matter really well. It's just so average that it's not really holding my interest. I don't know, this is her first appearance, and basically she just sort of walks up to them, and she's like, okay, we're going to go back and sit in your living room for a few minutes, and then go do stuff. I hate to say that maybe something's not comic booky enough, but this just feels just bland and empty. But not overwhelmingly bad. What are you thinking?
I don't know. I like it enough, I guess.
I think you're kind of like me in that you like, I don't know, you it's sort of the halo effect. Like you like this book, and there's certainly good things about it, but I just don't think this is a strong issue of it.
Yeah, I think it's fine enough. I would say I'm still a buy, but I would have to hit the mush meter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that for the introduction of this new character that I hope they can take in a good direction, right now I think this is on shaky ground, but it could certainly go in a good solid direction. It's probably worth checking out just for that, but I am thoroughly mushy on this one. There's not a lot of draw other than the fact that, oh well, here's some nice art and a new Power Girl.
I like the ending. They've blown it. They're gonna. I like the cliffhanger. I enjoy that.
I guess, but I don't know. I kind of just want to forget this book. I am. What do we do? We got to go to 5 on the mush meter.
I'm gonna say I'm a 3.
I'm a 5. I am right there on the edge.
So are we right there on the edge? Are we averaging that out?
Hey, you take it for what it's worth.
So we're double by high on the mush meter.
High
on the mush.
High mush content. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so next up, a book I am thoroughly confused about my feelings for. If it ever loads on.
I'm not confused at all about it.
Okay, good. That's nice to know. I don't think my iPad apparently believes I don't own it, so we'll get there eventually. Batman Superman. Oh my lord! Come on. You're supposed to be a good iPad. Batman Superman, number 18. You know what I like about comic books? I like the ones that have credits pages right on the front, in the first page, not in the last page. Greg Pak, writer, Adrian Sayaf, pencils, Jonathan Glapione, Sandra Hope Archer, and Jamie Mendoza on inks, Ulysses Areola on colors, Rob Lay on letters. I don't know if they can
make
that.
Someone's name is Areola.
Or Ariola?
I
don't know.
That's really someone's name?
Look at it if you want. Page
23. I'm looking.
Read it.
I'm looking.
What does it say?
That's not how it's spelled necessarily, but I don't know how that's said. That's not good.
Regardless. Okay. I really enjoy certain things about this issue. Like the fact that to get to Superman, you have to hurt his best bro.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this villain has come up with. I really enjoy that. That's the thing that he targets Batman because he wants to hurt Superman the most. Superman cares no one about more on Earth than Batman.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Before hoes, man. Come on.
The rest of this, I'm just kind of meh about.
No, it is an entirely forgettable book in which, why does Lois Lane look like this?
I don't know. I can't answer that question.
She has never looked like this ever. What page is this on? On page 12? It's like the single worst drawing of Lois Lane I've ever seen.
Page 12. Okay.
What?
The worst you've ever seen?
That's bad. At the bottom of that page?
It can't be the worst you've ever seen. Worst is a bad. That's a lot. You've seen Lois Lane drawn a lot.
Yeah, that's the worst.
I don't think it's the worst I've ever seen.
Well, you're privy to a lot more Lois Lane art because that's pretty poor.
I mean, it's not great. I won't say it's great, but I don't think it's the worst I've ever seen. I don't know why she looks like she looks in this book, but that's not really my beef with it. I don't know. I certainly do not feel how I'm probably supposed to feel, and I think that's my main complaint. Like, I could care less about the city of Kandor.
Mm-hmm.
And all this nonsense.
I think it's hilarious that they're shooting tiny super people at Batman. That's amazing. I love that, but only because it's dumb as hell.
Yeah, it is pretty dumb. I just don't care about the kitty of Kandor. Meow.
Wow.
The city of Kandor.
I'm gonna punch you in the neck.
That's fine. It's worth it. And I think that, I mean, I don't know. I don't really have it's just, yeah, like you said, it's like just not memorable.
God almighty. I really hate Supergirl's costume. I really hate it. It's so awful. It's almost as bad as Lois Lane's wardrobe from 2002.
I don't really like Superman's costume that much either. But
it's okay-ish, I guess. Superman's always had a dorky costume. I think I'm about on the same plane as this one as with the other one, but that's just me.
I'm a do not buy.
Yeah, God, don't buy this awful book. Unless you want to see what Lois Lane looks like as a late 90s lesbian.
As opposed to a 2015 lesbian? Is that
yeah.
Okay. Okay, double do not buy. Batman Superman number 18. If someone told me going in, like, okay, they're going to shoot tiny Superman at Batman,
Mm-hmm.
I would have gone, okay, I'm in. But then it didn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work as well.
Moving on to Marvel. It's time for Moon Knight number 11. Written by Brian Wood, art by Greg Smallwood, Jordi Belair on colors, Travis Lanham on letters. I really like this one. This is really good.
This is the best Brian Wood Moon Knight so far. I mean, clearly the best.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's wearing hockey masks.
Not strange at all.
Everyone's a goalie.
Everyone's a goalie in this prison. Mm. I said I was gonna. It reminds me of the Ellis run with the the sparse dialogue and stuff, and letting the artist tell the story.
I liked it when Mark Spector got a shiv in the kidneys.
Did you now? Great. Enjoyed that?
Then he punched a woman.
He did. He did. Face. She had a hockey mask on, though. She's fine. She's going to try and inject it with something. Mark Spector didn't like that.
Why would he? I will say the twist at the end. What the hell, man?
I like it.
I like it too, but that's still stupid. You're not gonna know. You're not gonna know how many drugs you're gonna be on where you don't notice that. Grumble. Audible sigh.
Audible sigh.
Mm-hmm. Audible sigh.
Cold.
I'd like to point out that this cover is bullshit. At no point in this issue is he wearing that suit and beating up a SWAT team. That doesn't happen.
That is perfectly acceptable criticism. Because it's true. None of that stuff happens.
It is certainly true. None of that
it's
happens.
It's a cool cover, but none of that stuff happens.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm bi. Really like it. It's fun.
This is good. To say that this is the best Brian Wood Moon Knight, I feel like it's finally living up to the Ellis hype. I'm really interested to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Spector is not Moon Knight. I'm bargaining with Khonshu.
Yep.
I made Eric snort. Double buy a Moon Knight number 11. Yep. Finally. Our last book, or at least our last proper book of the week. Comixology decided to crash on me. That's good. Always great.
Who needs it, really?
When I'm trying to read comics, Comixology just stops working. That's always lovely. Is Powers, the new volume of Powers, number one. Written by Brian Michael Bendis. Created by Brian Michael Bendis and Michael Avon Emming. But Bendis wrote it, Emming drew it. They both share storytelling credit and creations. Colors by Nick Filardi. Letters by Chris the Greek, Christolopoulos. I like that we have an official nickname for Chris now.
Yeah, he's in every other book, so it's... we'll have to come up with a nickname for Jordi Belair.
Colorist.
The Fresh Princess of Bel Air.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad. What do you have you read any Powers books before, Eric?
No, I didn't know that this was a thing before now. Never ever heard of it.
I mentioned it to you before.
I don't doubt that, but you say a lot of things and they don't mean anything until I see a comic book.
Because they had a long run under Powers. One of the first things Bendis did that, you know, put him on the map, that wasn't a superhero book, quote unquote, even though there are superheroes.
This is clearly all about superheroes.
But then they did Powers Bureau and a lot of different spinoffs, and now the television show is called a TV show. It's gonna be on on PSN, the PlayStation Network. Not necessarily.
What would you call something on Netflix, a TV show?
I guess.
Exactly. This is the world we live in.
I guess it is. Where we just call things regardless of where we watch. I mean, you could watch it entirely not on a television.
Yeah, you could watch it on YouTube and it's a TV show.
I guess so.
This is the in-between times when we're stupid. And we don't know what to call things.
But this is the return of it because of the upcoming PSN television series. Which I'm actually quite interested in seeing how good it is, because that first Powers run is really excellent. What do you think about this, Eric? What are your thoughts?
Well,
I'm interested, since you're fresh to it.
I had no idea that I thought we were just starting into an in medias res story. Coming at it from that perspective, it does a lot of good things. It catches you up on this whole backstory and you understand what's going on. Like, I completely had no idea that there was, you know, any of this history before this. And now it feels better, you know? Like, I want to know what has happened before. The fact that I was just supposed to accept it was one of my weak points on it. The fact that I can go back and see what led these characters to this point intrigues me. But it's, you know, it feels real and rich and fleshed out and really well thought out. That was my understanding just coming straight into it. I mean, I assume that I don't remember these characters' names, but I assume that the man and woman on the cover,
mm-hmm.
the man is the guy at the strip club on the last two-page spread.
Correct.
And the woman is who we follow around for 90%+ of the issue.
Correct.
And they were partners, and that's correct. What the original stories were about.
Yes, that is correct. I think it's fine. I know it doesn't. If you read the original Powers number one,
mm-hmm.
it's like immediately you're hooked. Like, yeah. I need to read all of this. This is, since I guess, you know, I haven't read the intermediary bureaus and all the spinoff stories that were been told in between all this. So I don't know exactly where the characters are or what happened to them in between the last big run of Powers, but I'm still, I do enjoy them. I think if you ever go back and read that original Powers run, you'd really like Christian especially. Dean is pretty interesting herself. I always like Christian more, but that may just be because I'm a dude. But they do really... Bendis does a lot of interesting things about... It feels... I don't know if you've ever read Gotham Central.
No, but I'm familiar.
Yeah, Batman Cops, basically.
Yes.
It feels a little bit like that, but, you know, it definitely has a Bendis... I don't think we've ever read any of his Bendis. I think we read maybe one of the new United States of Murder. Did we read that on the podcast? Did you read that?
It does not sound familiar.
Then I maybe read it separately. But you know, Bendis has written a lot of crime mm-hmm. comics separate from his superhero work, and it definitely feels like the best part of both worlds kind of comes together in Powers. And what do you think about, I don't think we've ever discussed his Emmings art. What do you think about it? How do you feel about his style?
It's very cool. It suits this. It's it vaguely reminiscent of Bruce Timm, I think.
Yeah, a little bit.
But it's a kind of artwork that I like, you know? It's got a stylization, but it's serious, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I can really appreciate. I also like the proportions and the way that the sort of figures are laid out. They have, you know, large sort of anime eyes and heads and sort of smaller frames. And I like the exaggeration. These are things that appeal to me that I try and put in my own art. So this is right up my street. I dig it. And the color, it really works. What am I looking for here? The color works to, well, we'll say to bring it back to the subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's noirish and grim, and it works with police drama, but it doesn't overwhelm you with it. You know, there will be a limited use of color, but it doesn't seem overdone in any places. It all seems very calculated and smart.
No, and I like the contrast between most of the story, and then whenever a hero, a cape, whatever, mm-hmm. pops on the scene, they always have, you know, the brash kind of superhero colors.
Oh, yeah.
Bright primary colors of their costumes. And you don't really see it much in this issue necessarily, but it really does work to tell, kind of show you what, it works the metaphor of the series as a whole. And like, these mm-hmm. are just regular people, and they're trying to deal with another world that is flying by, but they're not in it. And that, you see that here, even though it's not, if you get more to actual hero stuff, I'm sure we will eventually in the series, but, I'm a buy. I think, yeah, I don't know if I would be if I had not read the previous run, because I don't think this issue I think it has to do a lot, like you said, it like has to cover a lot of stuff to get for new readers, so I understand that, so, but I'm still a buy. I like it.
I feel like it works very well for me, and I had zero clue this backstory was here. I was softer on it before I knew that it all existed, and I'm better on it now that I know that. But I enjoyed it and thought it was well done before knowing any of it, so I was a buy before. I'm just, you know, less mushy now.
Less mushy.
Mm-hmm.
Powers number one, double buy. Mm. So, I read... We're getting into Southern Bastards talk. Is that what we're going to do? So, I read Rat Queens, the Braga special.
Okay.
So now I understand what you're talking about.
Yes, it's the kind of thing that's not, yeah. I think we should, we're going to have a little mini book club here.
Yeah, I don't.
So we're going to spoil everything about this book if you've not read the Rat Queens Braga special. The big quote unquote twist about it is about to happen. It's about to be discussed.
So if you skip ahead 5 minutes and something or something, we'll probably be past it. Till stop hearing the words Braga.
Yeah.
Hit.
I'll just randomly
seconds.
Say it through the rest of the issue. We'll be talking about the authority. I'll be like Braga.
Yes, anyway. It's. I understood what you. I in retrospective when you were just talking about it very vaguely last week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking back, I understand your confusion.
Yes, it is
you're like,
very
you're like
confusing.
Three or four pages in, you're like, what? Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I guess, all right. What we're talking about is Braga, and no, this is not, as far as I know, this has never been touched upon in Rat Queen proper.
Yes.
She's presented simply as she is, as a mm-hmm. big orc lady that murders things.
Yes.
And that is how you get her in the first two couple pages of this. That is what she is. She's waking up. She has a kitty cat. So I'm on board.
Of course you are.
And then we get back to her, like her origin story, so to speak. But in the past, she is not a she. She is a dude.
Mm-hmm. She is duding it up.
And she's the oldest son of a orc warlord who is straining against leadership and all that stuff. Which is, you know, a tried and true kind of, you know, dispute thing. But they kind of mix, like, it's seen in that, the vein of gender identity and all that. It makes it much more interesting. I think the most interesting thing to me is they never even really touch on it. It's all just there in the context and subtext.
Well, explain what you mean, because I didn't really see too much gender struggle. To me, it felt...
Well, that not
so
that's what I mean.
It on to me.
That's what I mean. That the fact that you knowing that, knowing her in the present,
mm-hmm.
It's all there in what you read into it, and that was I think it's a very delicate subject. First of all, hard to talk about in a book called Rat Queens, I guess, where most of it is orcs chopping each other into bits.
There's not enough orc dicks in this one, though.
We need more Gronch? Is that what your complaint
need
is?
More Gronch.
But I that's what I think that's the thing. I think that it's all in the context of... I think it's not necessarily supposed to be the main part of the story. I think it is simply the facts presented of her origins. How she got where she is.
The struggle for me is that I don't even see this stuff in here. I don't see really like young Braga or whatever his name was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see any sort of struggle for gender identity as much as, you know, he's a very different person than the culture he's grown up in, you know, that
mm-hmm.
that. He wants to sort of change things, and I mean, it's entirely possible. Like, he's like gay with that friend of his, it's unclear. Like, he just comes out, he's like, I love you, dude, and they're like, oh, let's bro hug in the woods. But it seems really strange and confusing to me. It feels like he changes gender to hide, and it's like it's not for any reasons. It's not for transgender dysphoria. It's just, it feels artificial to me. It doesn't make sense. And maybe, like, I don't know, maybe the perspective you're coming at it is, well, I know this character is this way, and you're putting together the pieces like from going from A to B. And for me, it's like a big leap that just doesn't work.
No, I don't think that it was necessarily like, I don't think there's a way to tackle that kind of that a gender struggle in a single issue story, especially one that's like this, unless you make it explicitly only about that. And while also including the power struggle and, you know, differences between her and her father and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not, I think they just went, you know, they probably, I imagine, will cover that in a later issue. Because honestly, she's not really a huge part of the series proper. She's like a bit character that they did they're doing a one-off on, and they may do another one now that she'll, you know, grab a hold because she has such a unique kind of history. But
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's supposed to be implicit, and you just take the comic for what it is. That, I mean, if you want, would you like it more if it covered it more explicitly? I don't know. I don't think the comic would be better. It would certainly be more laid out.
I don't know. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's not that it's not explicit. It's just that I feel like her reasons for changing genders are not terribly well defined. And maybe that's what you mean. I think that it needs to be clearer, because it doesn't seem like it's the right reason. You know, I think when people are transgender, it's because they feel like they have no choice.
I never thought that, oh, she's trying to hide from her father.
That is unfortunately how I read that she's like trying to reinvent her life and go off and be this other person. Like, I got no hint that, like, well, you know, this doesn't feel right. I feel like a woman in this man's body. Like, that's what transgender dysphoria is.
Yeah. And it's, no, I understand.
That's why these people, like, have to, like, it's just wrong.
Well, I just assumed
they have to do something about it.
I just assumed that's what she felt.
I guess, but she seemed perfectly happy being a dude, broing around, doing whatever, doing dude stuff. Like, she didn't, I don't know. There was no, like, being unfulfilled by it. And it's weird. You know, when you talk about, like, the gender issues here and, like, she's got to go off and, but she's, like, the exact same person, you know? She acts exactly the same as either person. Don't know.
That's not, I don't think that's that strange.
I don't think it's necessarily that strange either, but there's, I don't know, there's no, to me, there's no, and like that's what's interesting about trans people is that inner conflict, you know? That, I think, is, like, painful and beautiful, and it's something that we can relate to, you know, as on a human level. And the fact that it's just like, okay, well, I am X person over here. I'm tall, I'm big, I'm loud, you know, I like to fucking kill things, and I'm a dude. And all of a sudden, I'm tall, I'm big, I'm loud, I like to fucking kill things, and I'm a girl for no reason.
Well, I don't, like
not,
I said.
Not
I,
explained.
Well, I don't think they could.
And that's acceptable, you know.
I don't think they could in an issue. That's a big thing.
I think it's important, if you're going to say anything about transsexual people, that you should talk about, like, the reasons why and not just make them look like, oh, well, I just, you know, on a whim, whatever. I just thought I'd pick up a vagina at Walmart.
I didn't think of it as a whim. I don't think anyone does it on a whim, so I don't think I think that's a notion that a stereotype that ignorant people think put on trans people. I think
that's sort of what I'm saying is I think there is a really great story to be told in that around trans people because it is not that, and I don't think that it is really ever told that way. Like the trans woman in Orange is the New Black. I think the actress's name is Laverne Cox.
Correct.
Like, her character, I don't know, one of the best characters in the show. Very interesting. But, like, the gender expectation that her family put on her and her son put on her and the conflict that arose around it. That's what's interesting about her story. And maybe you could say that maybe that's what's weird about this, that it is so different, but it just sort of falls flat for me. But you're reading more into it and saying, you know, well, what if this? Well, what if this? What if this? This gets the gears turning in your head. With me, I just sort of grind to a halt and say, well, you know, I'm expecting X, Y, and Z here.
Well, I don't. I like the story for what it is. I don't really care.
And I enjoy it, too. It just, to me, it's about half of it.
Well, I mean, I went in going, okay, I know Braga, roughly, from Rat mm-hmm. Queens proper. I expect a little side story about her, going more depth to her character. That's what I got. And I wasn't expecting like a big, the surprise, like, oh, okay. But even with that, I'm like, you still understand where she's coming from to a certain extent, that was expected to be a leader of a, so I don't, going in, like when I get that revelation, I don't put on the expectation that they're going to explain it all. And I think that's actually the more interesting thing to me, because mm-hmm. I think trying to tackle that and all that other stuff, I don't think they can do it in an issue.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that I would have given the story a second issue. I think they're being stingy about it.
Well, they can't.
And as it stands, it doesn't quite work well enough on its own. But I like your perspective on it.
Would you not buy it again, Eric? Is this a do not buy?
No, it does intrigue me enough that I regret I've still not even read the first trade of Rat Queens. I've only read an odd issue here or there. I own a whole mess of them and just haven't read them. But it's still a strong series with a bunch of weird characters. And good God, there's so much fucking in it.
Yeah, it's definitely a sex positive book.
It is full of doing it.
Mm-hmm. It's like the new artist. That's the first thing that came out are like these drawings of like all these people naked, all the characters yeah. naked. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. If you wanted to skip spoilers about Rat Queens, we're done now officially. I think.
Braga, 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 braga,
braga, braga, braga, braga. Yeah. One thing I wanted to talk about before we moved on is the Secret Wars announcement. What it is. Have you caught any of this, Eric?
I did not really follow up on reading anything. Some dumb article said that the 616 is ending.
That's all up for debate, and that's kind of what I want to talk about. Right. It's apparently, I mean, it's basically what they said. Tom Brevoort, one of the editors at Marvel, had made it. You know, he did a big press conference, and all the comic people, all the big press, kind of put out stuff about it, but I don't think it's still so vague about what actually is going to happen that I'm not going to try and jump to any conclusions. It basically, for anyone who doesn't know, they're going to take the 616 universe, the Ultimate Universe, all their multiversal stuff, and basically make a battle world like the original Secret Wars back in the 80s, where, you know, they all these, like, you can, and like all those, they put out all those teaser images, I don't know, when was it, last year sometime, with, you know, X-Men 92 and War Hulk, and like they covering all their old events plus other things, and like basically all these are different universes that are all gonna collide and create this weird world, battle world. That's such a, it's so stupid. It was stupid in the 80s, it's stupid now. But Eric's flexing, trying to show me off his muscles.
Is that what I'm doing?
It looked like it. You were like,
I was just, okay.
You're like, oh yeah. But I don't know. It they said, oh yeah, we can use this as like everything is up for play. Anything can happen. I'm of the mind that I think that they see, obviously there's value in Marvel's continuity in the history of it. But
yeah,
there's,
I mean,
also
look at the new 52 and how shit it's become.
Yeah, and I think that Marvel sees that, mm-hmm. but I think they also want to get rid of a lot of also terrible continuity at the yeah. same time. So I imagine this will be a sort of soft reboot to a certain extent, where we get, I'll throw out my predictions. Let it be on record, and we'll see what comes true. Wolverine, alive again. Mm-hmm. Captain America, young, white Steve Rogers again. I don't know what they're going to do about Thor. I think that story seems like it has more to go on than what is going to come to Battleworld. Maybe there'll be two Thors afterwards.
Well, how far off do you think we are?
It's the summer.
This summer.
After that's, it's basically culmination of Hickman's Avengers run. Basically, that's the multiverse. Yes. That's all that stuff is happening.
That's what all of this colliding and bullshit has been leading towards, of course.
Yes. So,
which makes perfect sense. I get it.
They said they've done this around for a while, but I imagine that will be a soft reboot. Chucking out the crap they don't want, keeping the stuff they do want. We'll get Miles Morales in a proper universe, I imagine. You know, house cleaning. That's what this will be. And a lot of fighting. A lot of punching. I don't know what's going to happen, but that's my predictions. Or they'll have at least...
It seems like if it's not this, it's going to be something else, but I thought it would at least be a year or two.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Again, it's all hearsay. They haven't announced anything. Like, all they said is what it is. But actually what's going to happen, who knows? So we'll see. We'll read it and probably hate it, but, you know, whatever. I think that's enough comic, at least Leakily Floppies. We get more comic talk later. But no,
I did read one other book.
What did you read?
I read Jim Zub's Dungeons & Dragons book, number one.
Oh, how's it?
Did not care for it.
Really?
Yeah. I was really thoroughly disappointed. It was like $2. I might pick up number two just to see it. But
is it a very serious? Is it serious or is it kind of like Skull Kickers?
No, it's goofy. Yeah. And I forgot he did Skull Kickers, didn't he?
He still does.
It's the same goofy D&D story. And I didn't care for it. I wasn't really attached to any of the characters. No one was really endearing to me. It's okay. It feels spread too thin, honestly.
I might have to check it out just to see, because I really do like Skull Kickers.
It's worth it. It's worth $2. $2. We should do a Skull Kickers. We should zub it up in book club. We've never done a zub, have we?
No, we have not.
Never zubbed a book club.
Is that a verb now?
Book zub.
Book zub. Okay. So Floppies is over. Floppies part of the week. Mm-hmm. Gone. Flying away in the wind.
Yep. Hold it in your heart forever.
So, with that, it is time for checking in.
Ooh. My God.
I'm not getting tired of that. Checking is part of the show when Eric and I talk about what up to during the week. Eric, what you been up to? What you done? What you did?
My life is boring.
No, come on. Talk about Drink and Draw. We haven't talked about it on air.
I guess we didn't. Drink and Draw was an absolute blast, and I'm actually super stressed out about it right now because I've got to create a poster for next month's event, and I'm a little unclear about how I'm going to take it, you know, the direction I'm going to go. Okay. And it will probably take me several hours to complete it, and I have to coordinate the next event. So I'm stressing out, but the event itself was excellent. There were no real problems. Everyone that came out seemed to have a really good time. You know, it was fun. It was new blood and old bringing it together. The good old Drink and Draw. So, man, it was good.
Fun?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, you know, old Gary even came out.
I know. I saw the Facebook stuff.
I told him he needed to come because he's our mascot. And I will say, straight up, nerdiest conversations that have ever been in a Drink and Draw.
Really? That's quite a high standard.
It is. No fewer than two people that came to Drink and Draw work at a comic book store.
Oh, okay. I'll say something.
I don't know. If you're in the area, you'll be in good company. Of course, Yeah, it's good times. I felt really good about it. Drinking and drawingist. Don't really have a whole lot else I can talk about. I'm just, you know, shit's busy lately. I'm not playing games. I tried out playing Deus Ex.
Which one?
The more recent game. I can't remember what it's called. I can find out for you.
No, I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. I've played and beat it. I thought it was great. I really enjoyed it.
I'm having a hard time getting into it. I just don't like the way it plays. It's a human revolution. It also looks like crap on my computer.
Really?
Maybe it's just that old that it just looks terrible.
It's a little old. It didn't look terrible when I played it, but I always liked it because it was true to the ideal that you can beat like missions in multiple ways. That's what right. I always, that's the thing I enjoyed so much about it. The fact that
that's a good thing. And maybe yeah. I always suck so bad when I first start an FPS. It doesn't matter what it is. So I just got really frustrated and just like, well, this game is ugly. And I don't know. I was not really falling into the world. I'm going to have to give it another shot maybe, but I don't know. I have other games I can play. Well, but it was something that I owned and it's yes. been sitting in my library doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I think instead I just need to play Far Cry Blood Dragon.
I was going to say, if you haven't picked up XCOM yet, dip your toes in that.
Oh, I have XCOM.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I know you have.
I've never played it because I'm an imbecile.
You should play XCOM. You'll like that game a lot.
I imagine I will. I don't know what's wrong with me.
What's wrong with you?
Thing though that we're all imbeciles. We buy all these Steam games when they're on sale. Like, oh, this is $2. I'll buy it and 60 other things, and then never play them.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works.
And here's the Humble Bundle. Well, here, pay $12 and get 43 games. Money goes to charity. Fuck you. Yep. You'll never play this.
It's a pretty smart way to get you to donate to charity.
Do you know what's not a smart way to get me to donate to charity?
I don't know.
See what the new Humble Books bundle is?
I think so. Oh, Archie.
Wall-to-wall Archie comics. They're not getting a fucking EFF is not getting a nickel of my money about that.
I thought about it. I haven't done it yet, but I may.
I do hate that all these artists that I love are doing really nice artwork for Archie. I'm seeing, like, a lot of it, and it's really nice looking.
Have you ever thought, Eric, that maybe you should just, like, open your arms, open your heart, let Archie in? Okay. All right.
Archie had his chance.
He did? Okay.
Many, 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 many years ago.
Oh, and then
I've read a lot of those books.
Well, they're different now.
They don't appear to be.
You haven't read any of them. How do you know?
That's a lie. That is a lie. That's a lie.
You know what I have to talk about, Eric?
What do you have to talk about?
You'll never guess.
Well, I can guess because
I wrote them down ahead
something.
Of time.
Yes. Yes.
Podcasts. I'm talking about podcasts.
Uh-oh.
First one I want to talk about, I don't know if you've heard about this one before.
Uh-huh.
It's called The Worst Idea of All Time. And it is, in this podcast, these two gentlemen, they're two Kiwis, two guys from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
Which it makes you feel like it's... Jermaine and what's his other guy's name from? I gotta think of it. The HBO show. HBO show. Where they sing.
Oh, Flight of Conchords.
Flight of the Conchords makes you think of them because they have the same delightful accents. But the idea of this podcast, the premise is they watch Grown Ups 2, the film Grown Ups 2.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible, terrible movie. They watch it every week for 52 weeks and then podcast about it.
Seems like someone else did the exact same thing with another movie.
I don't know.
I can't remember what it was. Or maybe it was How This Got Made. They were talking about doing that, like as an art project.
Well, no, that's...
the same movie over and over.
Well, he plugged this at one point, Paul Scheer did, on How Did This Get Made.
Okay.
But they've been doing this for a while. I think they're in their 40s at some week 40 something. I've listened to the first 15 episodes. They're only 20, 25 minutes apiece. So they're not, I think any longer than that and they would get tiresome, but they're not. And it's very funny to see their mental struggle every week because they have to sit down. They sit down together generally and watch this terrible, terrible movie. And they are break down like such small details because they've seen it so many times. I kind of want to, and every week they're like, don't watch this movie. They tell everyone, do not watch it. And I kind of want to watch it just so I get understand their frame of reference a little bit. But, you know, it's interesting. It's fun. Certain episodes are like titled Frayed or Dread. Like it's all like this existential crisis they're going through every week as they have to watch this terrible, terrible movie. The other podcast I have to talk about, I guess I don't have to talk about. So the other podcast I want to talk about is called Invisibilia. It's by these little known guys called NPR.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of them.
I know. They're very small. They never...
What do they know about radio?
Radio or podcasts or anything like that. Obviously, dummies.
Radio casts.
But Invisibilia... Yeah, dumb Invisibilia casts. Is two lady hosts who are... They tackle... I relate it to very closely to Radiolab. It certainly shares a lot of heavy audio production, like radio with Radiolab.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely more focused than Radiolab is. Radiolab is just every time a new episode is like a new story, so to speak. This is tackling a subject, a clear subject matter in a more focused way, which I do appreciate. One was about fear. If you can necessarily control your fears. The one I really liked, they've only had a couple episodes out, is about thought and how you can't necessarily, like, the whole about different schools of analyzing thought in psychoanalytics and stuff, in psychoanalysis, where there's the old Freudian school of thought where, like, every thought you have means something. Like, if you think, I want to murder that person, that means it's rooted somewhere inside of you. And there's a new school of thought, which I didn't know about. Apparently, it's actually starting to take over Freudian.
Oh, yeah. Now, that's preferred that's methods exa- that's
of psychoanalysis.
Freudian.
Your thoughts don't necessarily mean anything.
More or less disproven as bullshit, but that's cognitive behavior.
Yes,
therapy,
exactly. And they talk a lot about it. It's very interesting. Yeah. I'm a big dum-dum, so I don't know anything about it. But,
well, the thing about cognitive behavioral therapy is it actually works and helps people, where the other shit is just bullshit and makes people.
That's
like,
what they talk about.
Themselves.
There's a gentleman in it who
there's
a dude who
it.
Like suddenly they watched like with his wife he watched a what the movie City of Man, I want to say.
Hey, my thing
Brazilian
is
movie about drug
what the
dealing,
fuck is going
drugs,
on the computers,
drug
today?
Culture.
Oh no, never mind. I'm recording. It just opened up the other file.
Okay.
Just kidding.
JK. But yeah, and they talk about a guy who's like, he suddenly has all these crazy thoughts about murdering people and he thinks he's going crazy. Mm-hmm. And all the guys like after he went to an actual, what you said, cognitive behaviorist therapy. I don't know the proper terminology, but, the guy's like, no, you just have a lot of crazy thoughts like everybody, but you also have OCD. So the OCD is making you obsess over your crazy thoughts. And he goes through by having people hold weapons to his head or throat or something to show that they're not actually going to go through with it. But the fear one is also interesting because one of the hosts is scared of snakes and they make her face her fear of snakes. And they actually talk about how they still don't necessarily understand how snakes move. Like science still doesn't necessarily get it. Like if you put a sock on a snake, it can't move anymore. So that but that's still only like the whole friction and like the friction equations and stuff they come up with. But apparently snakes walk; they don't crawl. Like if you look at their undersides of their bodies, the scales, they actually have spaces in between, like us, like their little foots, but they still can't, even with that revelation, they can't figure out all of the 100% of how snakes move like they do, which I thought was very funny.
Nanobots.
It must be it. They're closed. All snakes are nanobots. Yep. Made up of nanobots. They're not actually nanobots. So the two podcasts, check them out. They're fun. They're good. Them NPR people know how to do a podcast, apparently.
I can't even see when I'm actually pointing at you.
What are you pointing at me? Okay. All right. Oh, there we go. No, I got it. That's good.
This is terribly good.
That's
radio.
Great radio pointing. Mm-hmm. That's it for me. Two podcasts. Check in with you guys. Check them out. They're really fun. I've been playing Far Cry 4 a lot, but I'll check in with that next week probably because I'll have beaten it by then. I think it's time at last, Eric. It is time at last
for
me to pull up the file I need.
I would have expected.
It is time for Nerd Boy Book Club. Yeah.
Good
Nerd Boy Book Club. It's our show where Eric and I will assign a longer collected work, analyze it, discuss it in depth like you would a book club, except it's comic books. It's a wholly original concept. No one else does this. We're the only ones. Mm-hmm. We're smart. I think we've encouraged that a couple times. This week, we are doing The Authority, numbers 1 through 12, by Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch. This is a continuation of Warren Ellis' Stormwatch stories. I own them. I've not read them all yet. I really should because everyone says they're better. The obstacle for me is the fact that Stormwatch, the art is firmly rooted in
Hitch.
It's not Brian Hitch. Yes. It's 90s style dudes. Not cool. not good. It's not Brian Hitch.
It would be hard for me to take it seriously, but you're saying it's better than
Well, that's what everyone, like, the ideas are really, like, even go further. There's more, like, I don't know. I haven't read it, but everyone says Stormwatch is the book to read. If you like The Authority, go read Stormwatch, all that stuff, because it's more of it. But the art is 90s. Not, I don't like it. Yeah, it's 90s. It looks Liefeld-esque. Jim Lee. Not even, I don't think it's as good as Jim Lee. But I've read this before. You had not read this before. Correct? Correct. What do you think? What is, your first, give me your impressions. I always like to hear your impressions of something like this.
This
read
is the
before.
Shareware version of Planetary.
Well, it was done before Planetary, so.
Yeah. It clearly feels like he's warming up to Planetary. Jenny Sparks is mentioned in Planetary.
She is.
Yeah.
She is mentioned.
I had to Google that because I was like, Jenny Sparks, that name is so familiar. And yeah, she's in it, and apparently her and Elijah Snow bump uglies.
Makes sense. They're both century babies.
Yeah. Yes.
And yes, Planetary does expound on some of the ideas contained
these
in
these 12 issues.
And
it's not bad. It's a lot of the same kind of storytelling of here's this crazy impossible scenario, and here's how we're very smart and we get out of it, you know, seemingly easily and scot-free. That was just sort of the way that all the problem-solving worked in Planetary, but for some reason it just didn't work quite as well. Like, this is good, but it's strange that it isn't better. I'm not sure why it isn't better. Like, there's a lot of things in this I like. Like, I like the Doctor Strange analog, and I like this engineer. I like the fake Batman and this fake Superman. I mean, they all stand on their own merit, and they're all interesting just for the sake of being who they are and not just being knockoffs of all these characters.
Right.
But
do you, go ahead.
Stop it! Go ahead.
Do you think you'd like it more if you hadn't read Planetary first?
Probably. If I had reversed these, I'd be like, well, that was pretty good. And then I'd be like, well, that's awesome.
Because I had already read. I'd read this first.
This pales in
comparison. I read Authority first, then I read Planetary.
I think that having that really color my experience, I mean, it really has changed things tremendously. I would probably a lot more, but it just feels like it isn't enough.
I think it is very much more superhero-y than Planetary is, for sure. I think that'd be the difference between the two, is that this definitely feels like more of it is rooted in the superheroics, and it is less, obviously, it's still in that deconstructionist kind of genre. Where it's like, look at superhero books, and we're going to make it look like we're going to show you real superheroes and stuff like that, not quote-unquote, you know, DC Marvel superheroes, all that. But I think that this is definitely more rooted in Watch, like, Apollo, like, just be a bullet. Like, fly through things. I don't know. When I first read this, I was very impressed by it. I think it might have just been at the point in time when I read it. I had not read anything similar.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, they kill God. God is this awful. And quote unquote, God is this giant triangle with little.
It's a pyramid, to be fair. It's a pyramid made out of space.
Pyramid with Geiger-esque.
Of course.
Monsters. Flying everywhere.
If we're going to put a
xenomorphs.
If we're going to be scientific about it.
Yes, that's right. That's me. Heavy on the science.
That's Xenomorphicus Space Scaricus.
There you go. They are pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about, you mentioned Apollo and Midnighter, the Batman and the Supermans. We've had experience with Midnighter in the Grayson on the podcast.
They're kind of, it really feels like they're dancing around in this book, their whole relationship, like it's more of an undertone and not overtly stated. And it's kind of the most interesting thing, one of the most interesting things about this book. is just the way they interact, and I wish that there was more of it. But this was this was written in 1999-ish, you know, somewhere around there, possibly earlier. He probably felt like he had to dance around it just because the political climate was not quite prepared for it. Like, didn't in the 90s, is it North Star, the Alpha Flight character that came out as gay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's like, I'm a gay guy, except you'll apparently never see me with another man ever.
No, it's, yeah.
I just am gay.
Yep. And there is more later in this. The authority continues after this. With the next run is Mark Millar and Quietly. I didn't want to read it necessarily because it's, I mean, it looks gorgeous because it's Frank Quietly, but Mark Millar does a lot of, at first it's fine, but then he starts doing the more outlandish Mark Millar things, and it kind of takes away from the book in the end, but there is more Apollo Midnighter stuff in there if you want that. I've read all the authority. I chose 1 through 12 because I think it's the most distilled that it gets with this. Millar kind of, he starts off doing stuff that's like this, and then as it goes, he gets weirder and weirder and kind of, I don't know, not as good in a certain, I don't know. It's still entertaining.
I may check it
it's not
out.
Bad, but,
right.
And
I may
Frank
check
Quietly
it
does
out on my own.
If Quietly does, Quietly does not draw the rest of it. So I think if he drew the rest of it, I would certainly enjoy it, but he doesn't. He just draws, I think, the next arc right after this, and then as a different artist. What do you think about? We mentioned Brian Hitchard at the start, where I think we've had only read one Brian Hitch book, and we enjoyed it. Batman story.
Ah,
the one
that
we didn't like.
Story.
We liked the art, but not the story. I think was the.
I liked his bat boots.
Yeah.
They looked really cool. Brian Hitch can draw some sweet looking boots. He's booting it up. You know, I do have mixed feelings about Hitch, that he was part of this this sort of vanguard. You know, they were doing this push of, you know, movies, and they were trying to find the right home for movies back then, and they're trying to make comics feel more movie-like and grown-up, and, you know, your Cassaday and your Hitch were part of that. I like both of them, but for some reason, I find Hitch, like, more of the offender. I don't know why. I guess it was because, like, Ultimates was so big around the same time. Or, you know, it was a couple of years later. It was more 2000s. And it was certainly a nice step away from what we were getting in the 90s. The Jim Lee and the Liefeldian styles of the 90s. But, you know, I appreciate the more disparate styles and the more cartooniness and the more exaggerated work, the more varied and interesting things that are going on in comics now. I just didn't like that everything, it had to be straight up photorealism or bust. It was there was nothing else. And I think that it was just because of the big trend that Hitch started off. But this is a glorious book. It is really nice looking. And a lot of it feels less about trying to be photorealistic and more about, well, you know, this is just sort of the way he draws, and it's got some photorealism to it, but it's, you know, it's still more comic booky. He was still kind of finding his way in that. It was not quite the way that, say, like the Ultimates looked, which was just all photo reference and, you know, leaving me cold.
I certainly enjoy it a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the difference between me really liking the authority and not be able to finish Stormwatch. I can say that. And I think that, I don't know, because it's not, I think part of that is because they're not Marvel or DC heroes, that we don't have an image of them in our mind necessarily. I think that's part of it. And I don't know. It feels right in this kind of book. Like, Cassaday's does Planetary, and in that same way, it feels right. Do you think, this is definitely part of, you mentioned the Ultimates, it really is very much in that same vein of, like, a response to deconstruction of superheroes mm-hmm. in a certain way. Do you think it is making any kind of particular statement about superhero books, Marvel and DC specifically?
So what, like a reaction to
Watchmen in particular?
Yeah, well, you
everything
know,
was, but I mean, like
sex addicted superheroes and, you know, people getting on heroin and all this darker stuff. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, and then this is, yeah, like, there's Watchmen, and then there's a lot of books that try to be Watchmen, and then there's books as response to those books, and so, like, it's just a giant, it's all after Watchmen, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, things yeah. just send out ripples. It yes. just keeps happening, and everything reacts to everything else. It's just the way movements and art work. To me, mm-hmm. it's shocking that it's held up as well as it does, you know, because it is this mm-hmm. like I think of this like I you know I joke that it's like Planet the shareware version of Planetary. I was gonna say it's like Planetary Light, but there's not, it's not really light.
Yes,
you know, it's not like a cute little whatever story. This is much more violent than Planetary was. This is incredibly violent. You know, they'll just, you have 10,000 superpowered Chinese guys getting their heads punched off.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's, there are just people dying all over the place, and it's gruesome, really gory.
And but, like, specifically, I mean, like, all these are, like you said, like, almost all these characters can be traced to a analog, either, you know, Doctor mm-hmm. Strange, Superman, Batman. There's, I don't know, the, I mean, yes, Jenny Sparks is kind of unique.
She's kind
in
of
a certain way.
Thing.
I don't know who would compare that, Hawkmore to.
He probably does have one. I can't think of who it is. I don't know it. Maybe he's just entirely made up. He seems like a weird invention.
I'm not sure what character he would be in the superhero books. I can't think of any that's a direct analog to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the engineer is a, you know, Vision and all those other cyborg, those characters. And then there's, what's her name? The Hawk Girl. I mean, it's, she's like,
she's Hawk Hawk.
Yeah, she's Hawk Hawk, Shenley. I forget what her code name is, if she actually has one. But I think, like, the fact that they are, that, I mean, you're making a choice when you say, I'm going to have a Superman analog in this book. I'm going to have a Batman analog in this mm-hmm. book and make them gay and in a relationship. Is that, you think that's what it is? It's on a surface level. It's like just poking fun at them, or is it trying to speak to something? No, I don't think, I mean, at Marvel DC,
it doesn't feel very funny.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's intention to be funny. I don't think at any point that Ellis is, at no level is Ellis winking at us and saying, I don't know. I don't know if he's trying to make any sort of statement at all. It just seemed like something he wanted to do, like, well, I want to put Superman and Batman in here. They're really not interesting. How could I make them interesting? Oh, well, they're gay. But, like, he really is committed to it, you know, or at least mm-hmm. presenting it in a way that does not offend the delicate sensitivity of, like, this late 90s comic book reader. I was going to say male, but I mean comic book reader. Mm-hmm. But they were, let's face it, they were all dudes that are terrified of catching the gay.
Yeah.
I wonder if people were talking about this and were picking up on that. But you say Millar actually goes more into it.
Their relationship, yeah, a little bit. There's, I can remember, I was like thinking of moments between them, and they're not in this book, so obviously they're later on in the run.
Probably the only thing that, probably the closest thing that comes to it is when Midnighter is talking to Apollo, and he says, like, you know, what am I going to do without you, and, you know, this will happen, and I've done the math, and you're gonna get killed, and he's like, I just can't. That's probably the closest that we get to see to any real much emotion, other than the mm-hmm. fact that they're just sort of always around each other.
They refuse to reveal their identities.
Yeah, they really are. He really is using a light touch on that, but clearly it's, I don't know. I can't imagine, knowing the climate that I grew up in these times, people reacting terribly well to this. It kind of makes me think of that Dwayne McDuffie quote where he says, you know,
the, like, black superhero team?
Yes. Like a book with two or three black guys on it. Suddenly it is a black book. That you put two gay guys in this and suddenly it is a book about gayness.
McDuffie, what is it? Two, you can have one is fine. Mm-hmm. Two, that's okay. Put three on it instantly. It's the black superhero book. Yeah.
Then I think certainly 1999, people were even more sensitive.
16 years ago now.
I know.
Gosh. I think this is more focused than Planetary also, in a certain way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's brief.
I think
it's like three little arcs, get in, get out, tell the story of this.
Yeah, I mean, like, the stories themselves are, they're about that one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Planetary, from issue to issue, varies wildly, mm-hmm. which is part of its charm. But I think this is like, here is a story, we're going to fight... this evil terrorist dude who has really long fingernails. And then we're going to fight alien rapist dude. And then we're going to fight God.
I mean, that's a natural progression.
It seems like it. It does have a certain level of progression to it, doesn't
that
it?
The first guy is... Who's the famous character that he is clearly referencing with the fingernails? Why can't I think of it? Christopher Lee has played him a million times.
Oh, it's...
I can't think of the character's name, and it's killing me.
But in this, in the same way as Planetary, it presents these grand, big, giant ideas. And I think he gets grander as he goes. Do you think Planetary exists without this book existing first?
Oh, how could it? No, he was clearly laying groundwork and figuring out what kind of book he wanted to do. And he started Planetary not long after this, didn't he? Because it was very much about 99 and, you know, the turn of the century, and it was a lot of the same motifs.
Yeah, it started 99, so.
Yeah, but, you know, continued for years.
Yes, it did.
Because it was delayed for so long, my understanding was.
Yes, it got delayed multiple times.
But no, I think that he had a lot of things to figure out. This was sort of the draft for Planetary.
I think the story that intrigues me most is them fighting quote-unquote God, because it feels like we always talk about, we're reading these giant event stories, and they're always fighting the most powerful things on Earth, and it feels like that natural progression. It feels almost like that does feel like a statement to a certain extent, to the fact that at a certain point, the most powerful thing is not, if it is not an idea of a, you know, a Christian or another religion's idea mm-hmm. of God, it is, quote-unquote, God, the thing that has created Earth or humanity. And yet, and like we even, like Infinity, just even broached that to us a little bit, like where, you know, they're fighting these age-old creator race, alien races, and yet the word God is never applied to them. Like, the idea is separate, and yet it is what that is. I mean, that's what our idea, or at least the idea of a Christian God and a lot of
malevolent,
other
maleficent,
you know, Judaic religions is the person who created us and everything. And yet, and we're confronted with this thing, and it is not benevolent. It is what's the opposite of benevolent? Malevolent. What are your thoughts on that, Eric?
Well, immediately what it makes me think of is, I think it's interesting that Ellis dances around these guys' relationship, but just flat out throws out, like, oh, yeah, there's no God. He just throws that out there in this book. There's no God, but there's this space turd with Cthulhu in it that might as well have created all of life, and it's going to come kill us.
That is God, didn't you know?
Like you said, in Infinity, that there are these space monsters. But, I mean, I guess that kind of is the way Marvel is, that there are all kinds of gods in the Marvel universe. Galactus might as well be one. The Celestials. The Infinity Gauntlet is full mm-hmm. of them. they all might as well be called God. So I guess it is kind of, I was going to say that I think it's weird that he'll just flat out say that, but he won't admit that these two guys are in a relationship. Yet Marvel's like, well, we can't say the word God for a god. But I guess they do call Thor a god, don't they? He calls himself a thunder god, god of thunder, Thor god of thunder.
I think they couched that term.
Yeah.
With he's, you know, the fact that they're from these other realms, and that, I mean, it's in Marvel, like, every culture's god. I mean, the whole thing with the God Butcher story arc that he's hunting down, like, every culture's, every alien, every human culture, all their gods all exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. They're all real on some exist. Yes. And that's kind of, I mean, I think that's really out of the DC Sandman tradition, you know, that it exists in some form. But I mean, it's not like they didn't have, like, Hercules and Thor in, like, what, the 60s? You know, they've been doing that a while. Odin, you know, it's been in there. But they don't really go. It's interesting that they dance around, like, Ellis is just, yeah, there's no God, there's space turds. That interests me, that he'll just bald face, like, yeah, fuck that. But Marvel, I don't know, clearly creating shitloads of gods. No apparent, like, creator god in the Marvel universe, except for horrible space monsters.
Yes.
I think that comparison is interesting on that level. That is what I thought of.
Like, everything outside of humanity is out to get us. I don't know.
That's the theme.
It seems like, the authority is here to protect you. And, like, I don't... The fact that, you know, this Stormwatch, they were kind of a organization. They very briefly touched upon this in the very early on in this arc about the UN was funding Stormwatch. And now the authority are just, like, these team of heroes that are becoming quote unquote the Avengers or the Justice League, and it it does seem like we're here, but it becomes, I don't know, with the, I mean, Avengers has certainly become this in the Marvel universe, Justice League not so much, at least not in current 52 new 52 continuity and stuff, but like this very authoritarian, like the authority, I think, is right on the nose, where it's like an authoritarian almost. I mean, like, I think eventually a statement on the power of heroes and who are they to tell us what to do and all that kind of thing. I don't know if Ellis is necessarily going that direction because the fact that all these heroes are pretty much universally have goodwill of humanity in mind. Like, they're not selfish, or they're not I don't know. Yeah,
there's no darkness in them. They're all incredibly noble. They're all just like, they all have the Spider-Man great power equals great responsibility. You know, that is something that is true of both books that I thought was very strange, that it's not about, oh, I'm hyper masculine badass with 700 pounds of guns on my back and I'm going to go shoot a bunch of people in the face. And it's not hammy, like, oh, well, this guy killed a little girl, so I'm going to, like, pull his eyeballs out, you know. But it is, it's this, like, we have a higher calling and, you know, we've got this difficult job to do because no one else can do it. It's a lot. It's, it's this, Tom Strong also has this sort of sense of morality to it, you know, that he does these things because he just sort of has to. And it's an interesting sort of story. It feels like a much older story and a less cynical sort of story. I think that's one of the reasons that Planetary works so well, to a lesser extent, the Authority, and Tom Strong as well. That just sort of sense of goodness is, you know, it's something you've talked about an awful lot in characters that you like, but I think that we like complicated characters. We like characters that aren't simple. and stereotypical, but at the same time, there's something to be said for having characters with aspirational morality.
Right. And but I think it's interesting that we have these characters that are have that you are almost purely noble, and yet they are punching people's brains out.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, there's still the sense of underlying threat of violence and power there, even with that kind of noble ideal. And I don't know, it's a very subtle statement on superheroes, I guess. The fact that, I don't know, that even Superman, like, his, I don't know, Superman's purity in and of itself, like, they want to say that, oh, that's what inspires people, and that's what's so good about Superman, and yet most Superman comics are about him punching things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, the same thing, like, yeah, he's so great, and yet, I think that's my, I don't know, if there is a statement about superheroes in this, I think that's it, and that, like, yes, despite how noble a superhero is in superhero comics, even, like, Superman, like, we think of as the best, you know, he's entirely pure, entirely noble, and yet it still devolves down into punching. I'm not sure if that's entirely subtext in this, or if it's necessarily implied, but that's certainly what I get out of it longer glance. It feels like, and I think some of my favorite Superman comics and superhero comics are when they resolve things by not punching the problems, and I think that is
yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of why Elijah Snow works, I think, a little bit better. Because Jenny's just like, well, I'm going to get inside and electrocute something.
Yes.
Midnighter's going to go punch this guy's face in half. You know, I meant to say Apollo, but whatever. They'll both fuck a dude right up. Elijah has power to where he can freeze Dracula's crotch and kick it out, you know.
Yes.
But he doesn't usually resort to that. We very rarely get to see him do those things. And it really does seem when you think about Chiquita getting really bored at the end of Planetary, that she's that. She's what you're describing. She's like, I just want to punch something. I want to kick a rhino into space. Come on.
It's very important you get that done.
Jeez. But the books aren't really about that. You know, Elijah can do far more terrifying things with his intellect than he can with his powers, to where it's almost completely not about his powers. And that is usually the more interesting story. I agree. But I don't think that was exactly what you were driving at. But I think kind of those two things together. That subtext is certainly there.
It feels like it has to be with the authority and the fact, like, yeah, we are good guys and we are taking control. But we definitely do murder guys.
Mm-hmm.
They might be bad, but we still definitely murder them. They're definitely dead.
We
punch their heads off. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their eyeballs fly away. Like it's Fallout 3. Would you recommend this book, Eric?
Yeah. Probably not as enthusiastically as Planetary, but the same could be said of almost everything that we read. But it is, it's a good book. I like Jenny.
She's really interesting.
I kind of wish, I mean, I think they do kind of retcon her death, don't they, in the next
couple
of books?
Yeah, they do.
That doesn't surprise me, because I'm like, oh, I want more. She's pretty rad. And, I don't know, wearing a great big Union flag and shooting electricity at people. It's pretty cool, honestly.
So that is The Authority, number 1 through 12. Warren Ellis, Brian Hitch, proto-planetary, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely suggest. I definitely enjoy it a lot. Certainly, it's more superhero-y, planetary, certainly. Next week, guys, we're doing Asterix. 1 through 6. It'll be contained in, you can find them on Amazon, Omnibuses 1 and 2. And various. I imagine they've been published in about 40 different ways over the years. Yeah. But, yeah, 1 through 6. We're going to dip our toes. Eric, this is Eric's influence on me. I haven't read Asterix.
I'm going to turn you into a dirty Frenchman yet.
I don't know. It hasn't been successful so far, but we'll see. We have the Handsome Boys Comics Hour. You can find us at handsomeboyscomicshour.com. Find everything there. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/handsomeboyscomicshour. Find us on Twitter at HBCHour. Email us, handsomeboyscomics@gmail.com. Google us, you'll find us, certainly. Please, if you like the show, rate, review, subscribe to us on iTunes. It really helps us out. That magical format of iTunes somehow gets people to see us. We really appreciate it if you do that. I can't divine how it works, but it does. Mm-hmm. Like magic. You can find me online on Twitter at Mixmaster Serial. MixmasterCereal. Eric, where can they find you online?
Why, that's a good question. You can see my portfolio by going to freewillunlimited.com. And you can see most of the other things I get up to online by going to ericzgoodnight.com. That includes my Pinterest and my Tumblr. And you can tweet at me. My Twitter handle is Mr. Bad Example, spelled M-R Bad Example.
With that, folks, we will call it a day. Have a good one.
Rock and roll.